Wake up, Chicago. This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show on WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. We're on TuneIn, streaming live. We're streaming live on WCPT 820 on Facebook and on Santita Jackson and Friends. And you can also go to, please join us after the show on Santita Jackson and Friends page. I'm going to have to run because I have to run out to the airport today. I told you a couple of weeks ago, a very, very dear friend of mine passed away. And so we're going to celebrate her home tonight and first thing in the morning. Catrice Barnes, you might have read her obituary in the New York Times just about a week and a half ago. And in fact, she was the first Black woman to be the music director for the Saturday Night Live band. But she was a great songwriter, great producer, Emmy Award winner, Grammy nominee, on and on and on. And just 56 years of age. And she and I were in Roberta Flack's band together 30 years ago. And so I owe it to my girl. She was also Rosie O'Donnell's music director when she had her show here in Chicago. So I owe it to my girl to sing her home. And that's what we're going to do tonight and in the morning. So please pray for me as I pray for you. And just pray that I have some traveling grace and mercy. Everybody, as we talk about this 12-year ban on the NFL, Mike and Maria, I'm going to get to you in a hot second, but we're going to run through a couple of headlines just very quickly. My Lady B, on Tuesday, September 10th, 2019, just one day before this commemoration of September 11th, I'm praying for everybody. Praying for everybody, as we talked about the Bahamas, 70,000 plus people are now homeless. Nearly one in five Bahamians do not have a home in the Bahamas. And we're going to be looking out for the results of this North Carolina Congressional District 9 race, in which the Republicans tried to steal all these votes in the most crazy way, taking the absentee ballots and filling them out themselves. Who did that? They actually went to people's houses and got them and said, "We'll fill them out for you." Wow, crazy. President Donald Trump has suggested that very bad people, gangs, and drug dealers in the Bahamas could be trying to enter the United States after dozens of evacuees from the Hurricane Dorian-ravaged Bahamas without visas were forced off of a ferry, several in fact, to Florida. President Donald Trump said the U.S. needed to be, quote, very careful with who was allowed in, and implied that dangerous people could be trying to enter, including, quote, very bad, close quote, gang members and drug dealers. Everybody, we have to be very careful, he said. Everybody needs proper, totally proper documentation. Look, the Bahamas had some tremendous problems with people going to the Bahamas. I just can't read anymore. Look, 70,000 people who are homeless. How about that? How many of us could take a hurricane for almost 2 days? Some people stood for 24 hours. And I'm sure fear helped them to stand up. Oh, come on. This is ridiculous. And if you saw I was looking at CNN early this morning and late last night and watching these people pulled off of these ferries as they were desperately trying to come to the United States, and you're looking for their documentation. Can you find documentation in water? Really? I'm done with that. For the first time, for the first time ever, according to this Washington Post analysis of the Department of Labor, information. For the first time ever, most new working age hires in the United States are people of color, and it's driven by women. The surge of minority women, women of color, getting jobs in the United States has pushed the U.S. workforce across an historic threshold. For the first time, most new hires of prime working age 25 to 54 are people of color, according to this Washington Post analysis of data from the Labor Department of the United States. Women are driving this trend. It's powerful because many of these women were not even thinking about working because they were in school, because they were caring for their children, or they were at home for other reasons. You know, women are the caregivers in the world. And so that's a game changer, Lady B. I think you want to talk about that at some point. Okay, we're going to do that. We will absolutely do that. And of course, I said Congressional District 9, what's going to happen in North Carolina? Well, this is such an important race that the president has gone there to have a rally, right? He is saying, you know, you all have got to get out and vote for me. Because this, although this is a district that went very, very heavily for President Trump. Interestingly enough, there are 8% more registered Democrats in that district. But because of political gerrymandering, they constantly lose seats. They go unrepresented. Isn't that interesting, Lady B? Yeah, that's right. Call us at 773-763-WCPT. Wow, some sad news. Poor and middle-class Americans are much less likely to survive into their 70s than the wealthy, according to this federal report. Poorer Americans, according to this Washington Post story, are much less likely to survive into their 80s and 70s than rich Americans. A stark life expectancy divide. What is going on with me? Compounded by the nation's growing disparities in wealth. Wow, there's a wealth gap, and now it's costing people their lives. That's another story, Lady B. We're going to talk about that, too. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, was in Chicago, and she was talking about even Biggie Smalls, everybody, the past, the future, Antonin Scalia, who famously was her friend. But, you know, people can disagree, and that's one of the things I love about this show. We can disagree without being disagreeable and love each other to pieces. Just weeks after announcing she received treatment for pancreatic cancer, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Monday reminded a Chicago crowd that the nation, quote, has come a long way, close quote, while calling her rise to the top an unrealistic expectation back in her law school days. We just love this woman. Boy, she just keeps on going. Mayor Lori Lightfoot is angry and frustrated about runaway overtime at the Chicago Police Department and plans to hold Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson personally accountable for reining in an abuse beleaguered Chicago taxpayers simply, quote, cannot afford, close quote. The Sun-Times reported last week that the Chicago Police Department spent $67.6 million on overtime for the first 6 months of this year, even though the department is at a 10-year high in manpower and an all-time high in technology. I don't understand it either. I really don't. And there is a U.S. judge in California on Monday who reinstated a nationwide halt on the Trump administration's plan to prevent most migrants from seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border. I hope that that is extended to Florida with the people of the Bahamas. The Chicago Fire and the Park District are near a deal on a Soldier Field lease. I cannot wait to see that. Chance the Rapper postpones most of his tour, but for a very good reason. He's become a father for the second time to another girl. Boy, Lady B, it must be fun in his house. He's outnumbered. Love it. Oh, his baby daughter, Marley, born last week, joined sister, 4-year-old Kensley. And of course, I know the Bennett family, and they are wonderful, wonderful people. And I'm so, so happy for them. God bless them. Oh, they're a wonderful family. Chicago sports, the Cubs, wow, over the Padres, 10-2. Love it. White Sox will be playing the Kansas City Royals tonight. What's going to happen? The Chicago Fire will be facing off against Dallas on the 14th. The Chicago Red Stars will be facing off against the Orlando Pride tomorrow. The Chicago Sky will be playing the Mercury tomorrow. And the Bears versus the Broncos, of course, on Sunday. We had mixed results in the markets yesterday at the close of the day. The Dow was up by 38 points, but the NASDAQ and the S&P were down. The NASDAQ was down 15 points. And the S&P was down 28 one-hundredths of a point. Today, we're expecting a high of 88 degrees. Finally, it feels like August in September. I don't know. Everybody. You know what? Before we go to Jack Silverstein, you know what? If everybody would just hold for a moment, because I want to begin with Jack Silverstein. We've been talking about this, this ban on black athletes in the NFL. How many of you knew that, of course, we know that the NFL is now 100 years old. It started in 1920. And that's exciting. But did you know that from 1934 to 1945, blacks were banned from the league? Blacks had been playing in the league, but then they were banned. So I went to, my father was so excited about this story because, of course, he played quarterback at the University of Illinois, or at least that's what they recruited him to do. He was prevented from playing. He had a really hard time down there. But he ended up playing quarterback at North Carolina A&T, which is his alma mater now. And he was also recruited by the White Sox. So he's an athlete. He's really into athletics, but I'm from a family of guys. I was the only girl for 12 years, so they're really into sports, like Mark Pinsky and Matt Cummings and Antonio. This whole crew at WCPT, they get excited when we have these stories, don't they, Lady B? Every time we talk to Mark, he wants to talk about sports, does he not? Yeah. You know, here's a sports story you can do. So, Mark, this is for you. I had to say it. Mark, this is for you. This is a really interesting story that, that actually my father, Reverend Jackson, brought to my attention. So I went in search of Jack Silverstein, who wrote this story for Windy City Gridiron. Throwback, the truth about George Halas and the NFL's ban on black players. When the Bears wear their 1936 throwback jerseys, they will inadvertently pay homage to the NFL's 12-year ban on black players. And mind you, the Bears had black players wearing the jerseys. The league is more than 70% black. Look, Jack Silverstein, welcome to the show. I'm going to lean back because I just want you to tell the story. Because this is, I'm taking off my glasses. I'm not reading anymore.
Talk, back, huh?
Entertain me. This, you know, really, this is such a little known fact. And, you know, we had Chris Broussard from Fox Sports. You, of course, many people remember him from ESPN. We had him in conversation with you, and Jim Rose from ABC7, who, and Ryan Baker, I have to give him a shout out because he was going to be on the show, but we had some kind of miscommunication. But, you know, Jim Rose, whenever you mention from ABC7, whenever you mention these stories, he becomes very emotional because he, like Arthur Ashe, has always looked at race in sports and, you know, how sports can reflect and then shape or reshape, you know, the American or the world conversation. So tell me, first of all, what is this story and why did you write it?
Absolutely. And good morning, Santita.
Good morning,
listeners. This year is the 100th season of Chicago Bears football. And in June, as part of the celebration, the Bears held a reunion and they announced that they would be wearing a new throwback jersey, and it would be the jersey from the 1936 season. Now, this season, the Bears are also wearing jerseys from their 1960s, and those are the famous ones we saw Gal Sayers and Dick Butkus wear with the white C. And those jerseys are more in line with other Bears throwback jerseys, which is that they are tied to an era. They are the 1960s jerseys, the jerseys that we have, the navy with the orange blocks. Those are the 1940s jerseys. The orange jerseys that we wear are a tribute to a number of different orange jerseys that the Bears have worn, they wore in their first four decades. So typically these throwback jerseys apply to eras. And what made these jerseys that they announced in June, what made those stand out was that they are only a single year, 1936. The jerseys, Bears fans who are listening, you've probably already seen them. They look a lot like our normal white jerseys, but they have these four alternating orange and blue stripes on the shoulder, four stripes on each shoulder. That's their defining mark. So if you see those jerseys, these are the jerseys from 1936. They look very similar to jerseys that we wore all through the 30s, except that this one year they wore these four stripes. When the team announced them, team chairman George McCaskey talked about, he called them a one-year wonder, and he talked about Bronco Nagurski leading the Bears to a 9-3 season. So there's been a lot of attention paid specifically to one season as opposed to an era. When they announced the jerseys, they brought out Kyle Fuller and Tariq Cohen to model them. And because they're tied to one era, I started to look into that season. And a week later, I saw a post on Twitter from @ChloeSlivers. I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but she wrote about a man named Joe Lillard, who played here in Chicago for the Chicago Cardinals. Joe Lillard, in 1933, was the last full-time black player in the NFL. Starting in 1934 and running all the way through the 1945 season, those 12 seasons, there was, it's been described as an unofficial ban on black players or a gentleman's agreement, quote-unquote. There were no more black players in the NFL. And between these two events, the announcement of the jerseys and the tie to 1936, and this Twitter post and Facebook post on Joe Lillard, I started to read more about that period, and I learned more about this band. And it dawned on me that when Kyle Fuller and Tariq Cohen took the stage at the reunion in June, they were, in all likelihood, the first black players to ever wear those jerseys, these 1936 jerseys with the four shoulder stripes. Now, I knew about the band. I'm a sports historian, NFL historian, huge Bears fan. The first place I knew about it was in 1994, in celebration of the NFL 75th season. The NFL put out a documentary called 75 Seasons. They aired it on TNT. I had the video cassette. I watched it all the time. And the way that that video tells the story of the band is indicative of how the story has been roundly told. They talk about Fritz Pollard, again a Chicagoan. He was a halfback in the league's inaugural season, played for the league's first champs out of Akron. He, in 1921, became the league's first black coach, although at the time there was nothing made of that as a first because the NFL had just been founded and there were already black players. Paul Robeson, Inky Williams, 1923 All-Pro, and, of course, the great Duke Slater, who was a tackle out of University of Iowa. He also played here in Chicago with the Cardinals. But the way that the documentary tells this story is that they say, well, in the early 1930s, with economic pressures from the Depression, the owners felt like they didn't want to have their white fans see black players taking white men's jobs. And they talk about this ban in these sort of elusive terms. They talk about the Depression, and they talk about George Preston Marshall. George Preston Marshall was the founding owner and then the sole owner of the franchise that is now the Washington football team. He started the team with some partners in 1932 as the Boston Braves, changed his name to the Boston, the R word that is there mm-hmm. now, and then moved it to his hometown of Washington, D.C. Now, George Preston Marshall is important for this story for two reasons. One, as I said in the piece, he was a gleeful racist, or as I describe it, he was racist even for the 1930s. Let's put it that way. He famously said, "I will hire black players when the Harlem Globetrotters hire white players." And I have no doubt that George Preston Marshall came up with this concept of the ban, that he led it, that he pushed for it, that he was its most vocal supporter. Remember, George Preston Marshall didn't integrate his football team until 1962. The ban ended in 1946. So I have no doubt that he is the leader of this in terms of the rah-rah pep rally. George Halas has described in his autobiography that George Preston Marshall, when he had an idea, he would get up, he'd be very demonstrative, and I have no doubt that he was the leader. So that's one reason why it's important to know about him. But the other reason, and the subject of my story, is that as I was reading, I started thinking about what would have been the reality. I stopped thinking about the history that had been given to me, and I tried to just think about the history as it was unfolding before me based on everything that I was reading. And I'm reading from newspapers.com. I'm reading newspaper coverage of the day. I'm reading books. I'm reading other people's history, other people's essays. Pro Football Researchers Association, wonderful resource if you're interested. And it started to occur to me that while George Preston Marshall certainly led this, I just felt like it couldn't possibly be the way that we've been told, that it was only him. And I said he had only just joined the owners group. He had only just bought or he started a team. 1932. And in 1933, in February of 33, there was an owners meeting that, as I read more, I said, you know what? I bet this is where the ban took shape. What happened at this owners meeting was that the owners suggested and finalized a number of rule changes to make the game more exciting. The league was losing money. The Bears won the championship in 1932 and yet still lost $18,000. It was untenable, and they were still losing out to the college game. They weren't just nearly as popular as baseball. Remember, 1932 was already the year that Babe Ruth called his shot at Wrigley Field mm-hmm. in the World Series. So baseball, boxing, horse racing, and college football. And George Preston Marshall smartly said, all right, well, there are a few things we can do. We can split the league into two divisions and create a playoff. The championship game the year before had been at Chicago Stadium in a condensed field because of outside conditions. As a result, they had to have the goalposts at the front of the end zone, and it created more of a kicking game. So they said, let's move these goalposts up. They added hash marks at the side of the field. You know, if a ball carrier today goes out of bounds, they don't place the ball right at the sideline. You move it in a little bit so that guys can move. And all of these rules were designed to make the game better and bring in more money, and they were smart. So I was reading this, and I was just saying, gosh, here's George Preston Marshall making all these rule changes, and they're doing this in order to improve what they see as improving the game and improving the business. And who was chairman of the rules committee? Who was the only owner in that meeting in February of 33, who was also in the meeting September 17th, 1920, in Canton, Ohio, to start the league? Who was the league's dominant voice and personality? And in my head, I'm going, if someone else is jointly responsible with George Preston Marshall for this ban on black players, who would it have been? And I said, man, it has just hit me with so much force. It had to be George Halas.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Because when we come back on the other side of the break, I want to talk about that.
All righty.
Perfect timing. We're talking with Jack Silverstein. Did you know that the NFL banned black players from 1934 through 1945 for 12 seasons? They didn't start off that way. They even had a black coach. But something happened. And Jack Silverstein, thank you for uncovering the tie between Papa Bear George Halas and this ban on black players in the NFL. We tried to put it on someone who was a card-carrying racist, absolutely. But somehow or another, George Halas has escaped our attention. And, you know, it's interesting. Those families, in large part, who enforced that ban, who created that ban and enforced it, they are still the owners in the league today.
Hmm. That's right. And that's. I just want to make this point really, really mm-hmm. quickly. I focused on George Halas in my piece for two reasons. One, because I do think he was the strongest voice. Like I said, chairman mm-hmm. of the rules committee, reigning champion, oldest, longest standing owner. But it wasn't just Halas. The point of the story is that you can't just look at George Preston Marshall. You have to look at all these people who in their own city are as beloved and revered as George Halas. We're talking about the Mara family with the New York Giants, mm-hmm. who still co-own the Giants to this day. We're talking about the Rooney family in Pittsburgh, who still own the Pittsburgh Steelers to this day. We're talking about the Bidwill family, who purchased the Chicago Cardinals for $50,000 not long after that meeting in February of 33. Bidwill family still owns Cardinals to this day. We're talking about Curly Lambeau of the Green Bay Packers. Obviously, Packers are owned by the city, but mm-hmm. gosh, is there a name in pro football? If there's a name that's as esteemed as the single word Halas, it's the single word Lambeau. We're talking about Burt Bell, who started the Philadelphia Eagles, became the longtime commissioner, and now has an MVP trophy named after him. We're talking about Joe Carr, who is the president. So my point is not to just say George Halas, but my point is to say we have to look at the people who have been presented to us as heroes and be open and be willing to be honest about them. And so as a Bears fan, as a Chicagoan, I said, I have to start in my own house and I have to look at Halas, who I do think was of those the most powerful voice. But believe me, as I've said, if I were a Giants fan, I would have written a lot more about Tim Mara. If I were an Eagles fan, a lot more about Burt Bell. A Steelers fan, a lot more about Art Rooney.
So sure, sure.
That's where we're coming from.
We're talking with Jack Silverstein. You've got to read this article, Throwback, The Truth About George Halas and the NFL's Ban on Black Players. You can find it on WCPT820.com. We're posting that link. And on Santita Jackson and Friends. And more with Jack Silverstein when we get on the other side of the break here on WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, the Santita Jackson Show. Call us at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. Of course, we have a ticket giveaway. But, you know, Lady B, everybody wants to listen to this story. Is he a great storyteller or what?
Yes.
This is great. Yes. More. On this 12-year ban on black players in the NFL and George Halas's role in it. Wow. And all of the people who still own and have such a huge footprint in the NFL today, these families. Let's talk about it on the Santita Jackson Show, back in just a few minutes.
Because facts matter. You are listening to WCPT 820.
Hey, everybody, as we close out the hour on the Santita Jackson Show on WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, we're giving away a pair of tickets to see the Capitol Steps at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. Ha, ha, ha. Hold your fire. It's Thursday, September 19th. September 19th. It's a hilarious comedy troupe that lampoons the political figures of the day through song parodies. You know, I interviewed them a few months ago when I guess I didn't know I was trying out here, but when I came in to fill in, and tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster outlets and the Genesee Theater box office. They're really funny, everybody. Going to hold up. Going to give us a few minutes so I can, I'm going to take call. We're going to take caller 7, but not yet. I want you to finish listening to Jack Silverstein and this fascinating story. I mean, Lady B, is this story fascinating?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this, Jack Silverstein. I want you to continue with your story, but I want you to make it relevant for us today. I mean, we've looked at, just continue with the story because, I mean, how did you land on George Halas? Yes, you are a sports historian. Yes, you are a Chicago fan. Yes, you are a Chicagoan. Why was it important for us to look at George Halas and these other families who are still playing such a huge role in the NFL, in the league?
Yeah, thank you, Santita. It's important for a few reasons. The first is that this is a piece of NFL history, and in my opinion, the story wasn't being told accurately. The complete story wasn't being told. It's very easy and comforting to find out about a 12-year ban on black players and have this boogeyman and George Preston Marshall to assign it to as the sole actor. And again, definitely a leader and what a goblin. but nothing happens on the will of one person. It's always a collective. And as I thought about that, and then I said to myself, okay, well, who would have been involved in the collective? And that's how I got to Halas, Mara, Burt Bell, Rooney, Lambeau, etc., Bidwill. So that was point number one, just tell the story truthfully. I think the second reason that this is really important and that it's important to look at this this particular story is that it reminds us that we don't always have the best perspective, not even on years gone by, but on our own time. Here's what I mean by that. It is very easy to look at the story that I wrote and to look at that period, whether you talk about that meeting in February of 1933, you talk about the start of the ban in 1934, if you talk about the season from the jerseys that the Bears will be wearing this year. Remember, they'll be wearing these twice this year. The first time will be in 2 weeks, September 29th versus the Vikings at Soldier Field. It's very easy to look at this and dismiss it as, quote, they're men of their time. Oh, this is just how things were. And listen, when we're talking about their time, 1936, the most famous sports, one of the most famous sports stories and really global stage stories of all time happened in 1936, the Berlin Olympics, Jesse Owens, Adolf Hitler. So that's the time frame that we're talking about. And I had a number of people say to me, well, what's the difference? Why are you talking about this now? This is just how things were. And one of the people I interviewed for this story is a sports historian, author, professor, Professor Lewis Moore, who's fabulous. And he's at LewMoore12 on Twitter. He has like so many newspaper clippings for any current event. And what he always does is you'll hear about something now and he'll say, look, this is what was happening on this exact same subject years ago. And that's why history is important. It'd be very easy for us to say, oh, well, these people, they were men of their times. And what I was thinking and what Professor Moore notes in my story is that, no, these people were complicit. And just as it is easy for us to say, oh, gosh, in the 1930s, boy, that's when the racism was, and they didn't even know what they were doing. Well, if you encourage that as a trait of how to look at history, then here's what we do. We set ourselves up for our grandchildren to look back at us and say, they didn't know what they were doing. They were just people of their times, and that's why any number of things happened. And falling into the category of any number of things, I think, is the situation that has gone on now for 3 years on Colin Kaepernick. And I think that that is a very important tie-in to the story, because you had Joe Lillard of the Chicago Cardinals, Ray Kemp of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who became the Steelers. Those are the last two black players in the NFL before the ban. You have halfback Ozzie Simmons out of the University of Iowa, who set the Big Ten on fire. They were calling him the next Red Grange. He wasn't drafted into the NFL. You have Kenny Washington from UCLA, who led the NCAA in rushing yards and who was named to every college player's All-America ballot in a single survey. They surveyed 1,659 college players. Kenny Washington, the only unanimous selection. He wasn't drafted into the NFL. He didn't join the NFL until 6 years later as one of the two men who reintegrated the league with Woody Strode. And these people were stripped of opportunity despite the fact that they are in a profession that is allegedly a meritocracy. And that is what has happened with Colin Kaepernick. He should have been on a roster in 2017. And I'll note that there are a number of excuses that various people have given. We don't know if he really even wants to play, or why did he quit, you know, and leave his contract. And I debunked a number of these myths in a story in September of 2017. I'll tweet it to you, Santita, and you can share it with your readers. But when we look back at the Colin Kaepernick situation, we're not even going to have a George Preston Marshall. There's not even a singular boogeyman to look at. And instead, what we have are all these people who are going to fall back on the same thing that Mara, Rooney, Bell, Bidwell, Hallis, that they fell back on, which is plausible deniability. Because each one of these owners and all the general managers around the Kaepernick situation, they're each going to point to their specific needs. Oh, we didn't want this quarterback because of our system, or, well, we were bringing up a young player. We wanted someone who matched him in skill set. And, you know, I think the only one that maybe makes sense is in Miami when the Dolphins brought Jay Cutler out of retirement because their coach had coached him before. Colin Kaepernick had said things about Castro and Miami, and that was maybe a bad mix. But you can always do that. You can always kind of isolate this factor. But reality is that you have to look at the total picture. And the total picture is that one of the best 64 quarterbacks in the NFL was not allowed to have a job because he spoke out on something that he believed in. He didn't harm anybody. He spoke out. And he was going to do it silently until very accidentally people started to notice. I don't know if you remember, but the way that this was brought to the public light was that he had been sitting on the bench for the national anthem for the first two games of the preseason. And in the third preseason game, a reporter up in the press box took a photo of the field about something totally unrelated to Kaepernick and tweeted it. And then another reporter noticed, hey, why is Kaepernick sitting? And then a reporter from NFL.com, Steve Weich, approached him and said, "What? We saw this. What were you doing?" And that's when Kaepernick came out and said anything. This was a silent protest up until that point.
Hold that thought. Let me go to Shapiro. She has a question for you. Shapiro, yes, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Santina.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Jack. I was listening to you actually on K-Popo Live on Sunday, but I was so busy I didn't get a chance to call. But I wanted to ask a question about restitution. When you have 12-year ban on black people, what type of restitution is the NFL giving to the family of all of these players that were definitely able to play, but they were prevented from playing? That's question number one. And you touched on Colin Kaepernick and how the league is still doing this type of silent banning of black people and blackballing of black people. And I'm seeing this still going on, and everybody is, you know, seems to be complacent. And Jim Rose said on Sunday, he said that Colin Kaepernick is, they have, like, I don't know how many football players they have in the league, but he said he's better than 40 of the quarterbacks that are currently playing. So this is a choice that the NFL is making. And I think that I want to also lastly get your opinion about this merger with the NFL and Jay-Z and how they're using this black man to actually circumvent this racism that is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you very much for listening and for joining the conversation. Your first question, what is the restitution that the NFL has given to the black players and the family of the black players who were banned from the league from 1934 to 1945? And the answer is, I don't know. And I my guess is none, and I will continue looking at that. And as I have findings, I will share them with Santita and Reverend Jackson, and they can share them on the air, tweet them out, et cetera. But I find it hard to imagine that anything has happened. And one of the things that I recommended and that I've started to be in touch with the Hall of Fame about is honoring some of these players in the Hall of Fame. Now, that is a far cry from being able to set up, you know, your family properly, and you never know what's going to happen. George McAfee, the Hall of Fame halfback for the Bears, when Kenny Washington was second team All-America in 1939, the other second team halfback was George McAfee. The Bears drafted George McAfee. He went on to a sterling Hall of Fame career with the Bears, won four championships, and tragically, in his old age, was in an assisted living community and passed away when he accidentally drank, I think it was bleach. So you never know where life will take you regardless of your setup, but that's a great example. Here are two guys, Kenny Washington and George McAfee, allegedly, according to the All-America voting that year, even though Washington had the superior season. And George McAfee gets to go on to the Bears, and he's celebrated. His number is retired. You know, he's a part of Bears lore, even if a lot of fans today haven't heard of him. He was a fabulous, very famous player in the 1940s. And Kenny Washington, on the other hand, didn't get to do any of that. So I would like to see that as a starting point. I would like to see the league address it. And I don't know what the right answer is after that, but what I wanted to do first off was just get us all dealing with the proper fact set, and then we can decide what to do. But to answer your first question, I don't think that there's been any restitution, but I will look into it. I am looking into it. And when I know something, Santita will know, and you all will know. The second question was about, and I'm sorry, the third question was about Jay-Z. The second question was about Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, I'm sorry, do you remember, Santita, the exact question on number two?
Well, I think you can really merge the two.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's why people are wound up about these agreements that that Jay-Z and his company, Roc Nation, have made with the NFL. They're saying that, you know, okay, but Colin Kaepernick is still out of the league because he was protesting, even though no one's really heard from Colin Kaepernick. People still feel that that there's something amiss here.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, as far as debunking myths, people will say, Colin Kaepernick hasn't played in the NFL since 2016, so he can't even play now. Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. Now, it's possible that that's true, but he hasn't been given an actual proper workout by a team that was legitimately interested in signing him. There have been a few shows based on PR, but with the Seahawks and Ravens, but those didn't go anywhere. So I would still like to see a team bring Kaepernick in. And look, even in this season that's only technically 1 week old, starting quarterbacks have gone down in Indianapolis and Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
So I certainly would like to see that. As far as the deal with Roc Nation and with Jay-Z, I think that we get into another dangerous area where Jay-Z becomes the focal point of what's wrong with the NFL. I think there are certainly some fans out there who will look at this deal and say, oh, this is what's right with the NFL. And there were other people who say, no, Jay-Z, whatever you want to say, oh, Jay-Z is mistaken, or oh, Jay-Z is a sellout, or oh, Jay-Z is, you know, he's wrong about this idea that we're past kneeling, or what is he doing? I think it's very dangerous to look at Jay-Z and focus all of your attention on Jay-Z, because he's not an NFL owner. He's not an NFL general manager. And what he's doing is a business opportunity. I mean, you can say whatever, you know, you can make a judgment on whether or not it's a good or bad opportunity, or whether he's delivering on it in a way that's positive or negative. But I think that, in my view, people would be remiss to focus so much of their energy on Jay-Z, which is probably exactly what the NFL wants you to do, because, man, that's a great look for the NFL. Mm. They get this idea that, oh, well, we've got Jay-Z co-signing, and now anytime they want someone to walk point and essentially, whether explicitly or implicitly, address the relationship between the NFL and with Black football fans or Black players, they've got Jay-Z to point to and say, see, Jay-Z's on board. And didn't you love Reasonable Doubt? And didn't you love The Blueprint? And don't you wear Rockaware? And look at that, Jay-Z's here. Don't you love Beyonce? Jay-Z's here.
And that is...
to me, you have to stay focused on Roger Goodell, on the 32 owners, on the reporters. I think another problem with Colin Kaepernick situation and what happened there is that when you don't have reporters who totally understand a player's perspective or who understand a social movement, they're going to botch their interpretation of the act. And I think that if there had been, and I've been in, you know, as Jim Rose could say and Chris Broussard could say, you go into an NFL or NBA locker room and the players are predominantly Black and the reporters are predominantly white. And it's not to say that white people can't just fundamentally write about these issues, but I didn't see any really responsible, in-depth, appealing coverage of Kaepernick's protest. It was twisted up so quickly.
Absolutely.
You couldn't talk about the issue at hand.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought because I want to get at least one caller in, one more,
just before
we get out of here. And
alrighty.
I want everyone to call in now. We are giving away a pair of tickets to see the Capitol Steps at the Genesee Theater in Waukegan Thursday, September 19th. Enjoy this hilarious comedy troupe that lampoons the political figures of the day. We need some laughs now through song parodies and skits, but it's also educational, everybody. Tickets are on sale at all Ticketmaster outlets and the Genesee Theater box office. For more information, visit GeneseeTheater.com. GeneseeTheater.com. Contests running on WCPT 820 are open to listeners 18 or older and residents of the greater Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana area. One entry per person, one winner per household. Void where prohibited by law. Listeners may only win or qualify to win once every 30 days. Complete rules are available on our website, WCPT820.com, by clicking on the contest tab. Oh, wow, Art, I lost you, and you are driving. Pam, what's on your mind? Pam? Oh, lost her too. Okay, well, call us at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-WCPT, so you can win these tickets, this pair of tickets to see the Capitol Steps at the Genesee Theater. Don't you want to get some giggles in about some politics? Let me go to you, Maria, very quickly. Do you have a comment about this?
Good morning.
I've got about 30 seconds, my sister. You waited, and bless your heart.
Yeah, I did. Here's the theme that I've been noticing throughout the program today. It's about equality, inequality, how history is rewritten. People are creatures of their time, but they know what's right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, because many people have display that over the years. So my point is, my heart goes out to the Bohemians. My heart goes out to the folks that have to deal with this day in, day out, this inequality, how they treat us as human beings, because we are people of color. And how, as consumer, we still seem to pay the same price as everybody else, but we're treated differently. We're paid less. We're treated like we're not part of society. But as consumer, we pay like everybody else.
Well, you know, and you know the old adage, the poor pay more. And that's so true. Wow. Maria, just very quickly, did you know about this ban on black players from 1934 through 1945?
No, but it doesn't surprise me.
Mm.
It really doesn't. You know, their excuse that they wanted the white man to have a job. Well, it's the same thing with the women. You know, they prefer to have men have jobs than the women.
Mm-hmm.
This is history. This is throughout all of history. This has been going on for eons. And the sad thing is, people in power will rewrite the history so it suits them. And, you know, the football, it was very enjoyable listening to the history of the football. It doesn't surprise me. It saddens me. And the people that we worship because we're football fans, well, they got some flaws.
Well, you know what?
And
you know what? It's not just personal flaws. It's systemic. About 30 seconds. Jack Silverstein, everyone, we're going to post this, post a link in just a few minutes. Throwback, the truth about George Halas and the NFL's ban on black players. You've got about 30 seconds to close.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, to that caller, I'm sorry if I mistook the point. The question number two, if you tweet to me, I'll answer it, but I hope that we did you justice regardless. The point to close is that the history is there. It's real. And that's why I wanted to write it. You've asked me, Santita, multiple times, why did I feel it was so important to write this story? And it's because I think that stories should be told correctly. Like the last caller said, like Maria said, people will rewrite history to suit them. And we're seeing that right up to today with the president ordering the NOAA to agree with his tweets about Hurricane Dorian. I mean, it's the exact same thing, but he's just more brazen and doing it in real time as opposed to waiting decades. But the point is that history is important. You cannot know where you're going unless you know where you came from. I didn't say that, but I think it's true. And that is why I wanted to tell this story correctly. And then once we know what the story is, then Bears fans, NFL fans, whomever, they can make decisions about what to do, where to go next. I'm very interested to see how this story plays out over the coming weeks.
Well, you know what? Go to at Reed Jack, at R-E-A-D Jack, J-A-C-K, and go to WCPT820.com/Santita so that you can hear this entire interview again. And please share it. Please share it. Please share the video today of the show. Share it in, and create watch parties in your Facebook networks, everybody. Until, well, I'll be back on Thursday. But Brandon Johnson will be sitting in here tomorrow. Commissioner Johnson, who has his own show here at 9 o'clock on Sundays. It's going to be fantastic tomorrow. I cannot wait to be with you again on Thursday. Until tomorrow, Jack Silverstein, I thank you for your work and thank you for being here. And I can't wait to have you back on the show. Lady B, on behalf of me and Lady B, I know it's not grammatical, but there you go. I'm Santita Jackson on the WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. God bless you. Talk to you in a few.